B-Pod Studios.
This is 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sounds like fact, not opinion to me.
This is Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes. Twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. I thought I might have lost Chris there for a moment. He just up and walked out while I was doing the headlines, and I didn't see you. I don't know if you had to go hit the can, or maybe you were getting your overnight oats, or whatever it happened to be there, Chris, but it's good to have you back.
It was actually both.
Oh, okay, good.
Both of those things. I was trying to squeeze it in, running a little no-huddle.
You know what I wanted? We didn't touch on in the first hour, is we were mostly heavy Patriots, and if you missed that, check out the podcast, 98.5thesportshub.com, or on the app. The retirement of Julian Edelman, sort of sudden, but I don't think it was that big of a surprise considering what he played all of. Well, he missed 10 games last year, right? So
yes.
10 games, he's had this knee issue. Even at the end of 2019, you could see maybe he wasn't the same guy. The drops were up, had that big one in the wild card game against the Tennessee Titans. But the knee was certainly an issue. You heard the report from Karen Garigian of the Boston Herald maybe 2 weeks ago where even if he were to have further surgery, he was never going to be the same. So yep. I didn't think it was that big of a surprise. Did you?
No, not at all. And you know, I talked to some people in the Edelman camp, and really the upshot here is it was just he couldn't play. That knee never came around, and it was probably worse than it was initially billed when he had the surgery. I mean, it's almost like a Dustin Pedroia situation.
Right.
In terms of just there's no way he could play on that knee. It wasn't that he didn't want to. Physically, he was not capable of doing. And the Patriots did him a major solid, frankly, by failing him on the physical because that allows him to collect $2 million in salary he wouldn't be able to collect otherwise under the CBA. The fact that they released him with the failed physical designation, he's able to get some money. So they gave him a little bit of a golden parachute there on the way out the door.
And so now the at least some of the national debate became, is he a Hall of Famer? And
yeah,
if I had my Hall of Fame, I would say yes. And yes, there's a bit of Patriot bias in what he was able to accomplish in the postseason, but I do weigh the postseason and the performances
sure.
in the biggest games. And I thought he had his best games when the lights were the brightest, Chris. And so, you know, like so some of the comps being thrown around, well, Hines Ward's not in. I hate Hines Ward with the power of a thousand suns because I thought he was a cheap shot artist, those dirty blocks. But you know what? If I'm being fair, Hines Ward would be in my Hall of Fame because when the lights were the brightest, Hines Ward was the balls. He has better statistics, especially in the regular season, than Edelman does, but he's also a Super Bowl MVP in 2005 and that
he
wretched
was,
Super Bowl
game
win over Seattle.
One of the worst Super Bowls ever. That
awful.
Game was so bad.
But his postseason performances are very much like Edelman's, and so while I despise him because he always like you know killed the Patriots and he's a cheap shot artist and all that, I would have Hines Ward in the Hall of Fame. So you want to use that comp, fine. But again, if it was my Hall of Fame, both would be in. And if you look at some of those late 70s Steelers teams, guys like Stallworth, like that were postseason performers, I mean, they're in. So.
Yeah, but that's a different era of football, though. I mean, they didn't throw the ball as much. Like, so you can't start sort of comparing. Like, I'm sorry, Vince Swann and John Stallworth were both better than Julian Edelman.
Okay, and I'm not going to argue with you on that. I just, like, for me, again, I weigh the postseason performances. I would put him in. But I'm not going to sit here and be like, it's unfair. He's not going to. He's not going to get in.
Is the quarterback he played with a factor? And, you know, positively or negatively? In other words, do people look at it and say, man, look at all the guys that have done really, really well with Brady?
Well, I think that would be one of the things that they hold against him, right?
So if that's you look, what I'm asking.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Does that
yeah.
work for him or against him?
Against him.
Okay.
Against him, because I think that more, you know, national media types look at this and be like, oh, he was a benefit of the system and Brady and all that.
Yeah.
And look at what they did with Welker and Troy Brown before him. And you could do that with anyone. They won't be shocked if you get Gunnar Olszewski if Brady was still here.
So let me ask you this. Would you put Welker in?
Oh, God, no. No, so this is where I'm biased.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Statistically speaking, Wes Welker should be in over Edelman. But again, because I weigh the postseason performances and that Edelman outshined Wes Welker time and again in those biggest games, and Welker let Brady down in that Super Bowl against the in Indianapolis against the Giants, and then the following year had one clang off his hands on third down against the Ravens that changed the complexion of that game. No, absolutely not. In fact, if I had to tier them, Chris, it goes Edelman, Troy Brown, precipitous Grand Canyon-esque drop-off, then Wes Welker.
I love
the most overrated Patriot player of my lifetime.
I love angry, bitter fan Jim. That is so great.
Oh.
So basically, what you're saying is Welker is he's like the captain of the get the F off my team for you.
Oh, yeah. No, and he had that fumble drop, too, when he was with the Denver Broncos in that primetime game.
Yeah,
the Patriots came back and beat them. Oh, yeah, I reveled in that so much.
So, to me, you can't put Edelman in if you're not going to put Welker in.
I know.
The other thing I'm going to say about this, so let me throw another name at you. Reggie Wayne.
It's funny. The Hall of Fame thing, no matter what sport you're talking about, should just be your immediate reaction.
Okay.
Like, I don't think you should have to think about it. And so my immediate reaction to Reggie Wayne is no.
I bring it up because there's a logjam of a lot of really – the position works against Julian because there's a logjam of a lot of really statistically productive receivers.
Torrey Holt.
On a waiting list, essentially, to get into the Hall of Fame. And would you jump – any of those guys for Julian Edelman, I think that's a tough sell nationally.
Yeah, so he won't get in. Again, I'm not, he would be in my Hall of Fame if I had a vote,
okay.
But I'm not going to be, because I've heard others be like, it's unfair, and like fans are like apoplectic.
Alex Jones feels that way about it?
Yeah, it's a false flag conspiracy that Julian Edelman's not going to get in.
I didn't know Alex Jones felt that strongly about Julian Edelman.
That's right. It's the potbelly perverts in Washington that won't let him in. You can't be that mad about it, guys. Like, look, so another guy from like the 90s who I loved, again, a gun to my head, like a quick reaction.
Yeah,
Hall of Famer or not. Sterling Sharp. That's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, he's a Hall of Famer.
Like, just because he had his career shortened because of injury.
Yeah.
If Terrell Davis can get in, I think Sterling Sharp should get in.
I did not think Terrell Davis should have gotten in.
I know. So,
I'm a big Terrell Davis to me is one of the, he had a great career, but I just think it was too short and, adult braces. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I know. He benefited from who knows what.
There were some real changes in his mandible and his cranium during the course of his career, which may or may not have coincided with his production on the field.
Barry Bonds-esque is what that was. You have a take on the Bruins. Again, we haven't done the show together, a full extended three-hour show, in quite some time.
I do?
The Bruins have made some drastic changes here at the trade deadline and going into it. I was starting to lose my mind with this team. Like, I can't deal with watching them anymore and underachieve. And, you know, earlier in the season in the division with how it's restructured this year, it's like, no one really is. I look at all these other teams that they're playing night after night, and no one really scares me. And then you're going out and losing to the likes of the Devils and having tough games against the effing Buffalo, who stinks and is, like, generationally bad. And it's like, okay, what are we going to do here? Are you going to maybe sell off? Because I was getting really, really frustrated. But they add the likes of Taylor Hall. You've seen the emergence of Jeremy Swayman in goal, and all of a sudden it feels like, they might have found something here.
It really does. You know, it's funny. I had Matt Porter from The Globe on my podcast, the Take 5 podcast with WCVB, right before the trade deadline. And we were sort of talking, and, you know, something came out of his mouth that I thought was interesting. He was basically saying, like, this is almost feeling like a bridge year for the Bruins. And I sort of took that and ran with it, you know, the unintentional bridge year for the Bruins. And this was before they made these trades, because it was like, oh man, they're kind of stuck in between, and you have this great core, and do you want to be able to maximize it? And there's all these changes on D, obviously due to injuries with Carlo, Grizzlick. I think it was a huge mistake to count on Kevin Miller. I think he's one of those guys you root for him personally, but I think that, you know, professionally counting on him was a huge miscalculation by the Bruins. But then look, Don Sweeney, Donnie the Dealer, was really aggressive at the trade deadline, and I like the moves that he's made. This Mike Riley guy is a game changer for them.
I think he's been the best of the bunch that he's brought in.
Again, I say this every time. It's kind of like I will give you the constant, Chris Gasper caveat here, which is I'm not Mr. Hockey, but I didn't know about this guy. Should I have known about this guy? I didn't know he was this good. I know he's on the Senators, but
who's watching Ottawa?
I mean, you know? I didn't know that this guy was like a legit top 4D that they brought in, and the pass he made. Was it last night, the pass he made?
A little give and go with Bergeron.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That was unbelievable. What a great pass. He put it through the guy's legs. So I say good on Don Sweeney for being all in, because I'll be honest with you. leading up to this trade deadline, I was developing a take. This take was in take development that maybe the Bruins needed to move on from Don Sweeney. He'd been in the organization since 2006. I think he's in his sixth year as GM. They've had a hard, his whole thing was supposed to be, I'm coming in to develop this, you know, prospect pipeline. Hasn't really happened. A lot of these guys have underwhelmed. Jake DeBrusk has been underwhelming this year. Obviously, they ended up moving Anders Bjork, you know, in this deal to get Taylor Hall back. But I was looking at it and saying, man, Don Sweeney's kind of fumbling and losing and failing to capitalize on the closing window for this cup-winning core. And this was before the trade deadline. And he not only, in my opinion, saved the season and saved this team at the trade deadline. I don't know where the Bruins were at with this because he's boys with Neely, but I mean, he might have saved his job because they have not developed. I mean, look, obviously Pasternak is great and McAvoy is great, but the idea of continually churning out guys you can plug into the lineup, which was supposed to be the whole idea of going from Chiarelli to Sweeney, it hasn't happened. And he's made some horrible free agent signings. David Backes was his guy. Was Bolesky his guy too? Matt Bolesky,
yeah.
Was that him?
Yeah.
So there have been some really bad free agent signings too. He needed to make a move, and now suddenly the Bruins look like legitimate cup contenders here. The Swayman kid is good. Maybe he's sort of your, you know, Kenny Dryden. The old-timers will remember Kenny Dryden, you know, being able to thwart the great Bruins teams of the early 70s. Maybe he's your Kenny Dryden, or to a lesser degree, maybe he's your Jordan Binnington. Maybe he's that guy for you and pushes Tuukka. So the Bruins look like they're in business.
Yeah, and give credit to our own Dan Lifschatz, one of the Bankroll Boys here. I saw him tweet this might be the best trade deadline for a Boston team since Isaiah Thomas. Again, small sample size, yeah. But so far it looks it. Like,
yeah.
It wasn't just Taylor Hall, cross our fingers, you get the best out of him, and who knows with these other two pieces. Again, those other two pieces have actually been factors. And again, this Mike Sarge-Riley guy looks like the best of the bunch.
Yeah, I don't know anything about this guy.
Why would you?
Where did he come from? What's his backstory? Why was he available other than the fact the Senators stink? And are perpetually in a state of rebuilding. But I didn't know anything about, like, this was not like the years and years and years of lusting after. I used to joke that it was like the Loch Ness Monster, this mythical creature the Bruins were looking for, the puck-moving defenseman, Thomas Caberle. It wasn't like that. It was like, oh, they got this guy, Mike Riley. And I'll be honest, when they made that deal, I was like, who's this guy? I'm kind of bummed. Like, you know, I knew they weren't going to get Ekholm, but I was hopeful maybe something would shake free from another team, maybe Minnesota with this expansion draft coming up, would have to move one of their D because they can't protect them all from the Kraken. I was thinking something like that, like a big trade. Like, honestly, I wanted them to move DeBrusk. I wanted them to move DeBrusk in a big trade for a defenseman. And they brought in Mike Riley, and I was like, oh, who is this guy? This feels like, you know, is this the Lee Stempniak of the blue line? But this guy's young. He's legit. He's a puck mover. He can jump into the play offensively, and he's good. And I'm like, how is this guy available?
Yeah, and I just want the Swayman thing to turn into one of these Cinderella-type stories that you've seen in the NHL before. Now, granted, he was higher touted than someone like Jordan Binnington. But you've seen this kind of thing happen before. And I would even make the deal with the devil, Chris, that if he comes in and Rask has whatever happen again, maybe it's the back or maybe who knows, you never know with him, and it's Swayman that they go with, and they go on a cup run and win the cup, but then after that, like, he blows, like you've seen how, you know, Philadelphia has ruined Carter Hart, I could live with that. Like, if you win a cup with Swayman, and then that's it. Like, it was a flash in the pan, and he's just, like, the answer to a trivia question 5-10 years from now. I'm okay with that.
As if he follows, like, the Blaine Locker, Andrew Raycroft path, where, like, they were very good. I mean, Raycroft, didn't he win the Calder Trophy as Rookie of the Year?
I think so, yeah.
I think he did. The Razor, by the way, he's a great analyst. But, and then he got dealt for Tuukka. But, yeah, if this is just one of those Raycroft, Blaine Locker type of deals where the guy's just super hot for a run or for a year or, you know, it's like a Pete Peters type of thing or whatever. One of those guys. Like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah,
bring it on.
I will say this, too. If they are going to go on any kind of cup run, I do think it is going to be with Swayman because. Let me put it to you this way. Like, what's more likely to happen in net? That the talented kid like Swayman, who's probably too young and dumb to realize the gravity of the moment or the tortured history of this team in the playoffs, that kid plays fearlessly or Rask finally doesn't crap himself at the worst possible moment. And he does, you know, and it doesn't let them down in some way, shape, or form on or off the ice. Like, It would be with Swayman, Chris. So it's that, and they got to stay healthy. Like the other thing that's been, this team's been snake bit this year with one guy's healthy, one guy isn't. Like Kevin Miller's knee's fine. It's not fine. Like that game of whack-a-mole with injuries that they've played. Those two things need to happen. But I do think, I really believe they got to have a Cinderella story with Swayman.
I could see that. I'm more of a Tuca defender probably than most in that he's come so close. He's had two cup runs where he essentially played at a Tim Thomas 2011 level right up until they got eliminated. And that's 13 and 19. You look at the numbers, like right up until they got eliminated, he was on the same path in terms of the way he was playing. Now, obviously, there's a difference because he didn't win the cup. And I heard the other day you guys were talking about it. He sort of gets his name on the cup the same way Jimmy Garoppolo's won two Super Bowls.
Yeah, Bledsoe gets that ring.
Yeah, exactly.
Too.
So when you look at it, it's disappointing from that standpoint. But I don't feel like you that they can't win a cup with Tuca. He's come really, really close. Is he going to put you over the top in the Stanley Cup final? Is he going to put the team on his back, Patrick Waugh style? No, he's not. We've learned enough to know he can't do that in the Stanley Cup final. Can he play that way to get you to the final, though? Yes, he can. And then if you play better than you've played, I mean, the two times they got eliminated, you know, game six against Chicago and against the Blues, it wasn't just Tuca. There was like a complete defensive meltdown in front of him both times.
You people, I don't get it. Like, you're like a battered spouse. You just keep going back for more. Like, I don't know. No, things will be fine this time. It won't. I don't know why you keep buying into it.
I'm not saying you can count on him. I'm just saying he's not. You can't count on him to carry you to it. So I understand your Swayman thing, but I think they've made the team good enough now that if he plays at the level he's played at in the past and they don't choke it away like they did in those other two series with Keystone Cops in front of him. Like, what was the Chicago thing? It was like, I was at that game, I should remember, but it was like two goals in like 48 seconds. Against St. Louis, it was Brad Marchand with an ole, you know, worthy of like a bullfighter. If you just don't do something stupid, I think you could be good enough with him to lift the thing.
Ask some exes and the sister I don't haven't talked to in 15 years. You burn me, you're dead to me, and I'm done. So wow. I won't fall for the Rask thing ever again. So hopefully the Swayman thing is turning into something. The next NHL Cinderella story in net. That's what I'm hoping for.
Okay.
See some B's calls lined up. We'll get to those next. We'll touch on the Red Sox as well. It's Gasper and Murray.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone. This is Chris Gasper.
I'm not the one who's red-faced and ranting, so who's the baby?
And Big Jim Murray.
Takes in your face, sports.
Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I think it's a credit to the players in this room, the culture that they've cultivated here, the coaching staff. They make it so new guys can come in and feel welcome, but at the same time, we know the expectations and how to play and how we act here. It's been a lot of fun, I think, speaking for Laser and Mike. It's a great locker room to come into. A lot of skill in this team, but we work, and that's why we've been successful so far.
Taylor Hall, who's had a nice start for the Bruins. Since he joined the team at the trade deadline, I thought the first game left some to be desired, but as the game went along, looked like he was a little bit more comfortable. Second game was better, and then last night, he looked pretty damn good. So your thoughts on the Bees since the trade deadline, these couple of wins over the New York Islanders, who have owned them for most of this season, 617-779-0985. Tim in the car on Don Sweeney. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, hi, boys. Just a couple of points. The trade was great, I guess, for Taylor Hall, but I'm not convinced on Taylor Hall yet. And I know we don't have a lot of games to watch him with the amount of games left in the season, but, his motivation, he could have come to the Bruins prior to the start of this season, but he took the one-year deal in Buffalo for $8 million because that was more money. So if he was, and he had already, and I know, take the money, but if he really wanted to be with a winning program, he had the chance to come prior to the start of the season. That's point one. Point two, Sweeney has done a horrible job when it comes to drafting and then developing talent. And I don't think he gets enough criticism for taking players who are reaches in the draft that the Bruins have evaluated as outstanding, and then they come and they're stiff. And it's always going to be there, and everybody says, oh, we need to get over it as the fans. But that Matthew Barzal pick and taking Sinishin instead, he is never going to live that down.
Oh, Tim, preach on that. We took a call on Felger and Maz like a week ago where someone was like, well, it's time to get over that. Never get over
never.
That. Ever, ever.
The next three picks after their three picks were Barzal, Kyle Connor, and Thomas Chabot.
Right. Right, that's absolutely, and that Barzal pick or the lack of picking him, that stinks. Then finally, because I'll be fast. How come Sweeney didn't get criticized more for misusing the asset that was Torey Krug at the time? If they had no intent in re-signing him, I know they kept him for the big playoff run. Well, why didn't they trade him during the season last year and at least get a draft pick for him? They let him walk. They got nothing for him. And that just seems to be a lost asset. And when Belichick does things like that as the GM, Bill, we all crush Belichick. And I didn't hear a word from anybody criticizing Sweeney about that. And I thought that was just gross mismanagement.
I mean, we crushed, and to his point, you know, Danny Ainge got crushed for the Hayward thing.
Yeah.
At least on this station.
Well, there are people that I think that were wondering why they didn't move on from Krug. In fact, let's bring one on. Mike in Woburn, you were one of those very people, right?
Yes. The very summer after they lost to the Blues, I was like, you need to move on from Krug now if you're not going to re-sign him. This is the guy to move. St. Louis decided, you know what? Kevin Shattenkirk isn't a top 4D for us. We need to move on from them. They traded. They got major pieces that helped them win the cup. Kevin Shattenkirk wins a cup in Tampa, being what he is, a third pairing power play specialist. On a good team, that's what Torey Krug is. You can't have that guy. You can't have these small, undersized defensemen playing top 4 minutes and expect them to win you cups. They the last guy to do it is basically Brian Rafalski, and he did it on loaded Devils and Detroit teams with loaded Ds, you know, with a Hall of Fame defenseman next to him to make up for the fact that he was 5'10". And Brian Rafalski was more physical than Torey Krug and our current Smurf, Mac Resler. listen, Chris, you talk about why Don Sweeney hasn't drafted and developed. You talked about the 2015 draft. Everybody wants to blame Sweeney. I blame Sweeney. They were not prepared for that draft. Why were they not prepared for that draft? Because ownership demanded they get back into the playoffs immediately. Ownership demanded they needed to get a NHL-ready defenseman, and all the preparation of that draft was to trade up for, what's-his-face, who's now in Calgary, who didn't even stick with
Carolina. Noah Hanifin, they wanted Hanifin or Zach Werenski or Provorov.
Right, exactly. You know who blew that draft? Carolina, for not trading for the Bruins three picks and taking Barzal, Connor, and Chabot. Carolina blew it too, okay?
Yeah.
If we want to look at it from a realistic perspective, they blew it too. And the Bruins blew all, like, I almost lost my mind in the car when I heard Felger lamenting, basically swinging, punching Buffalo in the face, de-pantsing them, and taking their lunch money with a second-round pick for Taylor Hall. How many seconds did they blow, you know, when Felger was demanding, I need a hockey season. Lee Stepniak for a second and a fourth. Lee Stepniak for a second and a fourth. Where was Mike from State Farm for the risk assessment on that deal? Like, honestly, it boggles my mind how we've given this team's ownership a pass when you have the owner, after two missed playoffs, saying, I demand a deep playoff run. In the press, what is he demanding behind the scenes? Don Sweeney has done an amazing job, in my opinion, of acquiring talent via trades. He's been a better drafter and developer than Peter Chiarelli. Not hard, not a hard ass.
I was going to say, that's a pretty low bar, Mike.
Mike, you know
what? That's a low bar, but you know what? Baby steps from that disaster.
You know what? I wanted to ask you before we let you go, because you watch a lot of the league. Did you know that this Mike Riley was going to be as good as he has been?
I was aware of Mike Riley. I was aware that Ottawa is rebuilding. I did not think Mike Riley was going to be available. I did not think Mike Riley was going to be available for a third and basically nothing else. When the Bruins obtained him, he was tied for third in the league on D for even strength assists. Mm-hmm. Like, that is a major category for defensemen in terms of, if you're looking for offense, a guy that can create assists, and he's got a lot of primary assists. It's not like he passes it up to the forwards and they score and he gets a point. The guy is really good at creating offense, getting his shot through, finding that seam pass, the spring guys. He can actually defend. They actually play him on the PK. He's not a liability in his own end. That might be the biggest home run of the whole deadline. Peter Chiarelli spent over a decade looking for this guy. And he finds him for a third in a secondary deal. I was so negative on this team's outlook before the deadline. And
oh,
what
same.
Sweeney did for a second, a third, and Anders Bjork is unbelievable. By the way, thank you, Buffalo, for being... I don't want to say it, a dumpster fire, because it'd be an insult to dumpsters across the country. That's how bad Buffalo is.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, I was ready to be like, again, to take calls to sell, because I can't deal with this. But no, these moves so far have paid off. And look, is it premature to maybe say Taylor Hall's going to be revitalized and find his career again with Boston? Like, it's been only a handful of games, but so far so good. Like, well, let's see a bigger sample size. But again, if you just want to go from what he's done so far, 2 goals in 3 games compared to 2 goals in 37 with Buffalo. Like, so far, it looks good, but revitalized, well, we'll see. But so far, he's been a hell of an addition, and that Mike Riley has been the best of the bunch. More of your calls coming up. I have an announcement to make on the Red Sox. We will get to that on Gaspar Murray. I do want to let you know, though, that Gaspar Murray is brought to you by my guys at Premier Basement Waterproofing. If you're finding water in your basement from all the rain and snow, especially over the last like 24 hours or so, do not put it off. You need to call the waterproofing guru, our guy Mike Albert, right now and get that water out for good. To schedule with Crystal, call 844-LIVE-DRY, 844-LIVE-DRY, or just visit premierbasement.net. It's game over for water. Your calls and my Red Sox announcement next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Chris Gasper. Oh my God. Jim Murray.
Give me fuel, give me fire.
Give me that which I desire.
It's Gaspar and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I don't think it was a tough game at all, to be honest with you. You know, we came back. We were down 3-0, and we did everything possible to win that game. So the tough part, I don't agree with you. We ended up losing a game, and, you know, with a jam shot to center field. That's not bad. We just beat the American League Central champions 3 out of 4. So, I mean, we've been playing good baseball. We're down 3-0. We put good at bats. We tie the game. They ended up winning the game, but it's just another game. We didn't play great overall, but we did everything possible to win the game, and that's what we take out of this one.
Red Sox manager Alex Cora, after the loss in Minnesota that wrapped up that 4-game series. Yesterday's game, of course, postponed due to weather. They start up the series with the White Sox later this afternoon over at Fenway Park. It's Gaspar Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. So they're down. I don't know if you watched that. It was an afternoon game, Chris. They're down, for the most part, 3-0 in that game. And then the eighth inning, you have this ridiculous at-bat by Alex Verdugo. Hits this double, ties the game at 3, and it's like, holy crap, they're going to win 10 straight. And even going into that game in the first place, too, if you looked at the starting pitchers, it was Michael Pineda for the Twins, and that hack Garrett Richards, who is the weak link of the Red Sox rotation thus far. And you figure, they're going to drop this one. And then you also have the fact that Twins would likely be, you know, fired up for that game because they don't want to get – that's a good team.
Yeah.
They don't want to get swept 4 straight at home. So they'll be up for that game. But again, Verdugo gives them some hope there in the eighth inning. And Twins did what they had to do late. They win it. But regardless, they showed a lot of fight in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And they never gave up. That's a sign of a winning team.
Oh, so you're on the same page as – I forgot about – I was going to say this to you, but you had already turned your mic on. But I don't care. I'll say it on the air. I had forgotten that Alex Cora is like the Baghdad Bob of baseball.
Oh, he totally is. Oh. And it was annoying as hell in 19, in that season where, you know, in the first month, you realize, like, they're half asleep. They're going through the motions. Stop talking about them like, oh, well, we got nothing to prove. We're the reigning world champions. Like, it got real annoying real fast with that team. And that's where the dislike for me personally settled in real quick with the Red Sox. And then last year, they were a joke. A fake season, I know, with COVID, but still, like, it was a wretched product that should never happen with this team and their payroll. So I had written them off, and I was reveling in their losses last year. Again, hashtag be better. I won, Tom Caron.
You got to let that one go.
Never. That's it. I won, but again, I'm going to be petty about it. But that said, so I'd written them off. I was reveling in their losses. Here's my announcement. I like the Red Sox again. Chris, they play baseball. To quote Jimmy Stewart, who had a great tweet on this, the Red Sox play baseball while everyone else is playing with their computers. If you watch this team...
I have watched them, yes.
It's like what we grew up with.
Yeah.
Situational hitting.
And aggressiveness.
Aggressiveness.
Good defense.
Yeah. So Bobby Dalbec, right, like who Maz had ragged on, and it's like, you know, he was almost the epitome, not him as a person, but just like how he plays. And yeah. You talked about this last year. He's the epitome of everything he hates about what the game has turned into, the three true outcomes, walks, strikeouts, home runs. That's all Dalbec. Dalbec can hit. Like, he's been a good situational hitter. This Christian Arroyo, what's he got, six doubles already?
Yeah, they really like him. I mean, he's almost become like the everyday second baseman, and they'll shift Kike Hernandez and Gonzalez around.
Fun story. Good product. That's all. Put it on a good, entertaining product. That's all I'm asking for, and that's baseball as a whole. They haven't been able to do that so far. Even just some of the clips, some of the stuff you see with San Diego, like if I had no hitter with Chicago, like there's kind of cool stuff going on with MLB so far this season.
I would agree with that. I mean, Joe Musgrove throwing that no hitter, the Padres finally getting a no hitter, that was really cool. Carlos Rodon, who the Red Sox are going to see in this series with the White Sox, throwing a no hitter in a near perfect game. It definitely has been interesting. It's funny. I was thinking about this the other day. This is a little bit of a tangent, but I saw online again, because I'm all about these Jordan Chicagos, I tend to get all these like messages about sneakers and stuff. So there was something about they're bringing back, or someone's wearing like the Griffies, they're bringing back the Griffey Air Max cleats.
Oh, really?
And it made me think, who was the last like baseball player that resonated beyond baseball and was good enough to have like his own Nike shoe that even non-baseball people would wear?
Oh, geez. Well, it would have been Griffey, right?
I think Griffey, maybe. Like, did Jeter have one? Jeter was with...
He was a Nike.
He was a
athlete.
Jordan brand guy. But yeah. Did he have his own shoe?
I'm sure someone would correct me. Like, I don't... I think that he did. Maybe in the mid to early 2000s. I can't recall.
But it made me think, because I was thinking Bo Jackson.
The Griffies, I remember. But.
Yeah, Griffey was, I mean, those were great shoes, whether you like baseball or not. And basically, they took the cleats off them and sold them, and like, this is a sneaker.
Yeah.
But it made me think about that. So I bring it up only because as entertaining as the baseball season has been, I still look at the sport overall, and I say, who are their big stars that grab people, like that transcend their sport? I would say they're probably Mookie and Mike Trout.
Tatis feels like, to me, he's getting there.
That's
he's
a good
the,
point.
He's the cover boy of the new MLB The Show game, which, and again, if someone wants to correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding is it's now not just on PlayStation. You can play that on Xbox, so that can help promote the game and Tatis a little bit better. I feel like he's, if not there, he's getting there.
That's a good call.
But other young stars. Yeah,
but that's all. But that's three guys on the West Coast, not ideal for MLB.
Yeah. No, like they're still not what they were, Chris, a decade ago, and certainly not when you and I were young bucks. But I just know for me as a whole so far, after that wretched 0-3 start against the Orioles where it was like, oh, my God, these a-holes are going to do this again.
Yeah.
This is going to be like going back into jail. We have a baseball show to do where I sit in with Maz during the week and you can't suck. Like, put on a competitive product. Thankfully, they've turned it around and they're playing a pretty putting out a good product night to night and day to day.
No, I mean, they definitely are. I mean, I still would argue, and I'm not trying to be negative, they are entertaining to watch. I'm glad Cora is back. He legitimizes the team. He obviously gets the most out of what he has. I still would argue, though, they're a little lacking in star power. Maybe that's because Bogarts has been just steady. You know, I don't think Bogarts hasn't homered yet, has he?
I think he has one.
Does he have one?
Yeah.
Okay. I just feel like he hasn't really sort of been the guy. Like, it's hard for me to get super.
He had one against Tampa, I thought.
No, he has no home runs.
He didn't? Okay.
No. It's kind of hard for me to get excited about oh, JD Martinez is like using his bag of tricks again and, you know, watching his video and he's raking. It's like, great. Yay.
All right. Well, Chris still hates the Sox.
I don't hate them. I don't hate them. I'm glad they're relevant, but I don't find them to be a team that I am enamored of or that I'm engrossed in like I used to be. You know, I still feel like there's maybe something lacking from a star power standpoint. And the reality of the team is their two biggest offseason acquisitions were utility players. I'm one of these people that believes this team could be great. They could end up being like the 2013 team and surprising everybody and winning and surprising even the organization. But I'm one of these people that believes Chaim Bloom just wanted to put out a representative product this year because he had to, from a business standpoint, for ownership and Sam Kennedy. And the real team, like the real contending team, is being built in the background by Chaim.
I want to go to Tommy and Lynn, who has a thought on the Bruins. Hey, Tommy.
What's up, boys? How are you?
Very good.
Right,
go ahead.
So, all right. Rask, he might be out of a job, maybe. Swayman, he might be the guy.
He's been great.
Why not? Why don't we go with Swayman?
First career shot last
night. And I like the two goals. Back-to-back from Taylor Hall the past two nights. Let's go Taylor Hall because Krejci needs that person on that line because he never had a legit style on that line since 2011, since we had a cup team. So let's go Bruins and keep it up, Hall, and keep it up, boys. Let's go!
Love it, Tommy.
All right, Tommy. Tommy's pumped.
I mean, pull the plug on Rask? No. I would say this. Even I, who am out on Rask, but just okay. I would hope that they have a short leash with him. And he was good the other night, but if it's another thing with the back, or if he has, you know, three consecutive terrible games, then we can say, like, all right, we're good here. We're going to go with the kid. That's what I would like.
Interesting. Okay, so you've softened your stance, because at one point you were comparing him to a sibling you haven't talked to in a decade and a half.
Yeah, no, deep down, I'm done. But but I'm also firm but fair, Chris. Like,
okay.
He's been here. He's the established guy. He is their number one goalie. I would just ask that you have a short leash with him. That's all.
Okay.
That's
so all. Basically you're saying you will tolerate Tuca. This is the campaign.
Yeah.
Jim Tuca Murray tolerance. 2021. Tuca tolerance. Tolerate Tuca.
Joe in Vermont on Taylor Hall. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, no, I'm with you on Tuca because basically he's spending the collateral that his skill on the ice has earned him. And that's about it. Like, I'm pretty much done with him, too, because it's like, you know, the best thing a player can be is actually there. So, but I'm supposed to follow Tommy and Mike. Like, how the hell am I supposed to do that? But, like, seriously, Tommy's awesome. And, like, I wish I knew half of what Mike knows on hockey. Like, but I think we need to be easy on Hall right now. Like, he was projected to me as, like, kind of a baby and a punk, and he said he wanted to play in Buffalo because Eichel was better than him. And that's somebody that, like, has, like, I don't know, like, takes a look at himself a little bit. So it seems like he's grown up and he's got two goals in two games. And, I mean, I wouldn't say Riley or Hall or I want to say Lazan, but I'm
Curtis Lazar.
Lazar, thank you. It's a combo. Like, these three players are solid quality players. And that kind of thing gives a team confidence. And I think, like, to me, you can't put all of this on one of them, but unless you want to put it on Sweeney. But that's pretty much all I got. It's exciting to me. Like, hey, look, we got this red-hot, like, kid that we need to, like, not ruin. But it seems like he's pretty mature, and, like, even when you got Marchand, like, as mature as he is, saying that, like, hey, this kid's, like, cool, and he's, like, one of us, and he's joking with us, and, yeah, like, this is all right, like, I don't know. I think we're going to be all right.
Yeah, Joe, thanks for the call. The arrow feels like it's pointing up on the Bruins
now,
which is a good thing.
Definitely. Tough division, though. Despite what the sports vulture says, I think the division's tougher than Jones thinks.
We will wrap up with Josh in Connecticut. Final call here on Gaspar and Murray this afternoon. Hey, Josh.
Yeah. Hey, guys. I just want to get your feel in terms of Steven's volatility with these rookies. Naismith, you know, they played him a little bit at the beginning of the year. He hasn't seen the light of day the last, I don't know, 10 games. He's their number one pick. Pritchard, it looked like he was developing. Now he's, you know, a deep threat off the bench. I mean, Stevens is a college coach. He's supposed to develop these guys. You know, they're young. I mean, there's no consistency. And then last year, I mean, Langford, I think, is terrible, but he plays a little bit. And then the other guys, they don't see the light of day. Like, I don't understand. I just like to get your feel in terms of, I mean, is it, you know, is it Stevens? And why is he not developing these guys?
Thanks for the call, Josh. This was something that was bugging you earlier in the season, yeah. I remember, especially with Neesmith, is that Stevens would keep deferring to veterans.
Yeah, like Shemmy. You know, yeah. I think he's just more comfortable with guys that, even if they're exceptionally limited, he says, okay, I know what this exceptionally limited guy can do. This kid, I don't know what I'm going to get. But I would say overall, one of my big disappointments of Brad Stevens as a coach, and overall, I think he's very good. I mean, to follow Doc with Brad Stevens, that's been great for the Celtics. But there was this idea that he would, as a college coach, would be better at developing guys, especially as a college coach who wasn't getting five-star recruits and had to develop somebody like Gordon Hayward. And it turns out he's super competitive. As somebody over there once said to me, you know, Brad would light himself on fire to win a game. And that has overridden his development skills. And he's basically the same as any veteran NBA coach, which to me is a little disappointing because that was supposed to be part of the advantage of him.
All right, let's hit it. Five questions for Chris Gasper. Got nothing to do with sports.
I got five questions for Chris Gasper of Channel 5. I got five questions that got nothing to do with sports. I got five questions.
Five! One, two, three, four, five!
I got five questions. I hope this segment ain't too wide.
I honestly can't remember the last time that we did this. okay. Question number one, Chris. Would you go to a hologram concert? For example, we just recently lost DMX.
Yes.
A few years from now, would you, Chris Gasper, pay $100 or so for you and the wife to see hologram DMX perform It's Dark and Hell It's Dark and Hell is Hot in its entirety? Would
first
you see
all,
hologram DMX?
First of all, I think this is a repeat question because this has been asked before.
I have?
You have asked this question before. I would say no, I would not pay that money. I like concerts, but I don't go to them like you do. So it's a lot of money to begin with. I am looking forward to the weekend eventually swinging by TD Garden. But no, a hologram concert, I'm good. If I've learned anything from the pandemic, it's that there's nothing that can't be made better from watching it from the comfort of my couch.
Yeah, so I wouldn't. And my apologies for asking this before. Sometimes I get tripped up with these. So
let me
just redo question number one, though. All right, so now you've got the J&J vax I did.
Yes.
Are you comfortable going to a concert right now?
Oh, good question. Is it like the socially distanced 12% type thing, or is it just like the old days concert?
Well, say it's like the old days.
No.
Yeah, I'm still weird. I'd like to think, because I got it too, and I'd like to think like, let's get back to full normal. But like, where was I recently? So I went to the Celtics.
Yeah.
I went to the game against the Knicks.
Yep.
And there were certain areas I was in. I'm like, too many people. Like, I can't help. And I hate that I've become that, but we've all been conditioned here over the last year that
other people are an urgent threat to your health.
It was when we were leaving where it felt like kind of the old days, and it was like, all right, like enough, let me get out of this. You know, it's like that was still a little weird. So at 20% or so, like I'm good with it. I had no problem going to the game, but there still are certain areas where it's like, bleh. All right, question number two. Chris, your plane has landed. You've safely made it to your destination. Is it appropriate to clap?
No, not unless there was something during the flight that put you in danger. Like if the pilot did something, you know, told you to do the brace position, or if you thought you were going to die because you hit a lot of turbulence, that's fine. But I mean, just any time, no. It's like people that to me, that's like people that clap at the end of a movie.
Yeah, I'm not into it. But if you deal with even like the slightest bumps, I mean, I want to get up and like shake the hand of the pilot and like kiss them when we get there. I'm not a very good flyer.
I'm a terrible flyer.
I know you are too. So it's like if that makes you feel comfortable, as a lot of people are even worse than us. Like even getting on there is just like this big thing.
Yeah.
So it doesn't bug me that much. As long as you get there safely, that's all that matters to me. You want to clap, you want to hoot and holler, go crazy. What I can't deal with is when you have the stewardess or whatever the hell you're supposed to call them nowadays.
Flight attendants
are like doing the bits like they do with Southwest.
Oh, like you don't that. Like that?
Oh, stop it. Like, this isn't a comedy show. Stop trying to like work out your act.
I should have known this.
Oh, I hate it so much. Chris, just like, you know.
Now I want you to get stuck on a plane of Southwest that's like on the tarmac for 3 hours and they're doing like the
I hadn't flown them for better part of a decade, and then when we went out to the station had us go out to the Winter Classic at Notre Dame, and that was the first time I was on a Southwest flight in so long, and they were doing the bits and I just was like, oh God, this is enough. Just tell us we're going to get there fine. And like, that's all anyone wants. Question number three, Chris, on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being no big deal, 10 to being holy crap, we're going to get nuked here, how afraid of you are of potential of Cold War II?
Oh, with Russia?
Yeah, it feels like something's real bad brewing there.
I would say about a 7.
Yeah, I was at like a 9 the other day before Biden decided, hey, let's turn those ships around. Because that felt like, oh, we're going to get nuked here in the next couple of weeks. Like, great. And so, and I'm sure someone hears this and like, don't you root for the asteroid? The asteroid is, you know, that's beyond our control.
Yeah.
You can, like, we could, you know, everyone calm down between this and cold and Russia and bringing on Cold War II. Like, cooler heads need to prevail here. I don't want it to happen because of war. If it happens because of something beyond our control, a higher power, if you will, with the meteoroid. I'm all for it. Question number 4, Chris. Would you rather see blurry all the time and that could never be fixed, or go through life talking like Hayden Christensen playing Anakin Skywalker in the horrible Star Wars prequels?
I'll go through life talking like Hayden Christensen.
You really want that? You got to think about that.
Well, give me the voice.
I'm Chris Gasper of Channel 5, Master. Sports are coming up next. I don't like sand. Everything you do, all your sports reports, the Take 5 podcast. Welcome to the Take 5 podcast, Master. If you're not with me, you are my enemy. Those movies, he's so bad. Who did he have to get in bed with to get that role? Like, he's such a horrible actor.
Well, do you know that he has a child with Rachel Bilson from The O.C.?
Does he really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Well, I cheated on you, Padme. Master told me to.
So that's what you're going with? That's what you want to do? You don't want to see blurry for the rest of your life?
I am petrified of losing my vision ever.
Okay.
So, like,
well, it's just blurry. It's like you've had 9 beers. You go through life like as if you had like 9 beers.
No, I don't want any effects. Like, so the weird thing about me, I actually have like pretty good distance vision. And it's like a big part of my life. It's like a big part of how I drive. Like, it's like, I don't want anything affecting my vision.
Okay. Next question. Chris Gasper, Channel 5 for Bill Belichick. Yes.
Yes, Bill. Why did you decide to take an offensive lineman at 15, Master?
All right, and then everyone turns around like, what has happened to Chris?
Those movies are terrible.
Oh, my gosh.
They're so bad. He's going to be in. They're bringing him back.
I know. Yeah, I know.
What are they bringing him back for? I should know this.
Some prequels or a post.
Yeah,
who
that's
the
right.
Hell knows?
That's
now
right.
He's going to be the Ghost Vader. I don't know.
Yeah, like he's coming back. He's coming back for that, yeah.
Finally, is there a TV show on that makes you say, who the hell actually watches this crap and makes you repulsed that people actually do?
Oh, yeah. It's probably something on CBS. There's a lot of old people programming there. I don't know. Is that show Bull still on?
I don't know if that is still on, but it that does sound like... I know. I feel like I flipped by that in the last couple
it's
of years.
It's a lot of those CBS shows where I'm like, you know, who... Now, some CBS shows are very good. In fact, I will tell you, SEAL Team is excellent. My brother's a writer on that show.
Oh.
That show is very, very good. And anybody who likes Jessica Paré, who was on Mad Men, she's on that show. So that show is very good. But there are some other shows that you can tell clearly are made for an older... Oh, I know. I know the show that I'm thinking of. It might not even be on the air anymore. What's the one with, like, the two waitresses? And one's Kat Dennings.
Oh,
that show is so bad. I was like,
yeah,
people actually watch this?
I know which one
I think it
about.
Came with, like, a terrible laugh track. I was like, people watch this show?
Well,
what is it? Two Broke
two
Girls.
Two Broke Girls, yeah.
Even though I like that Beth Bears, she's like, she's definitely my speed. She's right up my alley, that girl. And I'm a Kat Dennings fan. But I would watch that show and be like, I just flipped by, but like, who's watching this? These lines are so hokey.
Mine is Impractical Jokers, which I get a visceral reaction to as soon as it starts at 12:30 after Seinfeld. Just put another Seinfeld on Fox. Who likes that effing show? And that one fat guy with the beard, his laugh, it's like nails on a chalkboard. God, I hate the Impractical Jokers. All right, Gasper, that will do it for us. Coming up next, Matt McCarthy and Leroy Irvin. Want to thank Kevin Maggiore for producing this show today. That will do it for us. Talk to you Monday with
Felger and Maz and then Gasper next Saturday. Goodbye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.